have a very special guest today. Her name is Amy Simon. She is the author of Cheerios in My Underwear, which is the longest solo show, longest running solo show in Los Angeles. Amy Simon, everybody.
Oh, hey.
First let me tell you, can you hear me okay? I admire you.
It's a little bit echoey, and I'm on my cell phone because I don't have any phone service
at
home.
Great. This is going to go well then. So listen, I think you're awesome. You know why?
No.
My wife drags me to all kinds of shows, you know, in Los Angeles. And most of the time I want to slit my wrists when I get out of it because they're so horrendous and boring and self-indulgent. And she dragged me to your show one day, and I was very, very, very happy when I left.
It's because of the cookies, and I took my clothes off.
That's right. Oh, you did?
That was just the icing on the cake.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Greg. It's very kind of you, and thank you.
Thank you for being on our show.
Oh, it's fun already.
Now, I didn't promise anything, so just hold on. Now,
gave me a big compliment, so let me gloat for a moment.
Enjoy it. We've been drinking a little, so God knows what's going to happen. It could get ugly.
Amy, you are familiar with radio. Do you have your own radio show here in L.A. as well?
There is a radio show that I can do when I can get it together to do it. Yes, I have an arrangement with KPFK, Pacifica Performance Radio. They're really fantastic. So it's a kind of an honor. And I get to go on there with my show called, I call it Motherhood Unplugged.
Oh, Stephanie was on that show with you, right?
You bet she was. Okay. She made it great.
But
she's
not
a riot.
I know she's a riot, but she's no political...
Genius.
She doesn't even know.
What happened, they decided to do a show called Pacifica Performance Showcase, which is to bring the arts in. And right. I had gone into the radio station to be interviewed for Cheerio. When Cheerio turned 5, they brought me in to interview me because, I had the longest running solo show. And I met up with the program director in the lobby, and I just pitched the heck out of him because I wanted to bring Motherhood Unplugged on the radio, is moms reading their essays on motherhood. And so I talked him into it, and he let me come on. So I've done about, 5 or 6. I could probably do one every month if I want. And last March, when it was Women's History Month, because I'm a women's history freakazoid now, that's what I've just been to. And so I did a whole show on women's history, and I'll be doing some more in March. So, yeah, and I go on Air America a bunch. So I love radio. Radio is my favorite medium. I mean it. I love it.
Me too.
I think it's the last intimate medium left. And maybe because we live in L.A. and I'm from New York, but when you're in your car and you're listening to the radio, it's so personal. There's something so intimate about it. And you hear stuff that you won't hear, and you don't see anything. So I think you get to really use your mind and imagine. And I just love the power of radio. I think it's awesome.
You're brilliant. I agree.
Are you imagining me naked right now? It's not that funny, Amy.
Since when did you turn into a mind reader? That's exactly what I was thinking about. And you look good, doll.
Oh,
you're looking
thank
good.
You.
What do you have, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids now?
I have 13, and I think one's counting. Coming out right now.
I have to imagine. I have to imagine her naked too.
You know, it's a way to imagine to look good when you're naked. I wear glasses. I don't know if Amy, you wear glasses too.
I wear glasses to see things up close, which I think is a gift from God that I can't see up close anymore.
Good.
Exactly. That's what you do. When I want to look hot and make myself feel good, I get undressed and I take my glasses off and I look in the mirror. And I look very nice.
I'm with you, baby.
Yeah, I don't see anything inappropriate. I actually look a little hot.
Ew. Yeah, I think that is one of the perks of getting old. It's like a gift.
Absolutely. Ew. Except for the little hair. Yeah, the little hairs that grow out of your chin are not that helpful, but all right. What are you going to do?
And then I walk by and I look and I see her looking in the mirror and I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
I'm like, look at me.
And I just keep walking.
He needs glasses now, though. He never needed – he had perfect, perfect eyes, and now he can't see, and I'm so happy.
Well
– yes.
Because I'm married to an old man.
So why does that make you happy?
Because I'll always be 3 years younger than you. I'm the hot younger woman.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, it's working out well for me because it makes my, it's good for my ego, because the older I get, the younger she looks, I look like I have like some arm candy or something.
I'm like a bowling trophy.
She's my bowling trophy wife.
Yeah, you guys got it going on. I think everybody's, you know, happy. It works for everybody.
Yeah. The grayer, I look old and she looks young, and I don't have to go sow my oats anymore. Now, you were married, weren't you? I met your husband.
Yeah, quite a charmer, wasn't he?
Well, he was when I met him. I think he
didn't say much.
He was really British, wasn't he?
Yeah, he still is British, and I'm surprised to hear that.
Oh, you mean when you get divorced, you don't lose your nationality or your accent or anything?
No, that's one of the few things you get to keep.
Oh, so you didn't take that from him?
No. You would if you could, though, right?
Nah.
Is that what made you this women's history advocate or anything like that? Or were you into it before you got divorced?
You know, I'll tell you, that's a good question, Greg. Because I wonder often, you know, why am I so obsessed? And I actually do think that having children and becoming a stay-at-home mom and then going through divorce just sort of fed my little appetite for feminism. And I hesitate to use the word feminism because I think it has such a bad rap that people, you hear feminist,
yeah,
and you think some militant, bra-burning, weird, ugly woman.
Yeah.
And I am a feminist, and I am proud of it, but I kind of call myself more of a womanist. But I will say I always was a bit of a feminist. Actually, now that you mention it, the first fight I ever had with my ex-husband was when we went for our marriage license, and he assumed that I was going to drop my name and take his name. It was something we never discussed, and when he realized, I mean, I really can remember, we were in like a stair, we were going from one floor to another, and he's like, well, darling, of course you're going to drop your name and take mine. And I was like, what? Yes, well, you know, he's filling out the paperwork. I'm like, no.
This is like in front of the clerk at the.
No, we were actually going from. I remember we were going from one floor to another in whatever building, and he was doing the paperwork. I just the memory comes back to me of a stairwell. You know, not, I don't know, but I said, I'll tell you what, Steve, if you drop your name and take mine, I'll do that for you. And he said, don't be absurd. And I should have realized right then and there that we were not on the same wavelength.
Yeah, he had no sense of humor.
No, he actually does have a very good sense of humor, well, but he didn't get that. You know, he's English. He's an English Jewish little prince who really just was not as evolved as I would have liked him to be in terms of, you know,
So you kicked him out.
No, I didn't.
On his tuchus, on his British tuchus.
I kicked him on his British tuchus.
He's fighting with someone with an accent. Like, more interesting? Like, do they curse?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? I was completely swept off my feet. He's this handsome, charming English. And I never even dated. I'm a Jew. I never dated. I had one Jewish boyfriend my entire life. For some reason, I don't know. And so I ended up marrying a Jewish guy. No, he was really, he swept me off my feet. But his accent was like, darling, yes, I'm a convicted felon and I'm gay and I owe the world a fortune. But, you know, I love you anyway. And it didn't matter. He sounded like Cary Grant all the time.
Yeah, that's
so true. I was definitely swept off my feet by the whole English accented package.
Now, how can I get her to become more of a feminist? And I'll tell you why, or a womanist, as you say, because I'm going through the credit card bills the other day, and all of a sudden I see, what was the place called?
I'm in trouble, Amy.
A private,
back me up.
Listen to this. A private affair, $430. I'm like, oh, that's not me. I didn't go to a private affair. Stephanie, what's this? Private affair, $431. Oh, I bought some bras. Bras?
Yes.
You bought bras for $430.
Yes, I bought about 8 of them. I have very large boobs.
8 bras for $430.
I have been wearing maternity.
Oh, so they charge
for
by the,
like 10 years.
They charge by the weight. What
no,
is that?
I've been.
You know what, Greg? Can I get in here for a
yes,
second?
Yes, please.
I want to talk to you, Greg, about your wife's breasts.
All right.
All right?
Yeah,
yes,
I like that. Go ahead.
they are not just for your enjoyment, as you have figured out by now.
But we have been married a long time. Go ahead.
What's that?
We've been married for 15 years, so I already know that.
14.
Yeah. But the thing about bras, I don't know. I'm thinking about like how you might feel about a car or some other really important.
Yeah.
You know, a woman's bra, especially when you have fed and nurtured children for years and, you know, set your kids up. Did you breastfeed them?
No, I didn't, I know. You got to go another way.
For the sake of argument.
Just stick with the nurturing part. The nurturing. Go. Help me out. Yeah, the loving and nurturing.
So far, it's not working.
Giving up myself for my children.
Go ahead. Go. $430 for bras. Okay, go ahead.
Your wife's breast did fill up with a fluid that can, like, save lives and do all kinds of things.
Can I send her to Haiti?
Oh yeah. You should be. Imagine if we could just send breast milk, you know, just tubs of breast milk. You could save a million lives.
That's a good idea.
Kidding aside, you're talking about magical stuff here when you're talking about a mother's breast.
So
whatever happened to them.
I put Walmart underpants on myself over my magical parts. What happens to that? They still work just as well. In fact, they work better than her parts that she spends $430 on at a private affair.
I don't know. I don't want to get too personal with you. You know, I don't want to ask you the weight of your personal parts, but I have a feeling that the weight of Stephanie's breasts have a lot to do with the fact that she has to go somewhere and spend a good amount of money. Worth every penny.
They got
to
be hoisted.
I'm no Tiger Woods, I'll put it that way.
Are like, the bra has to be like the Verrazano Bridge. It has to be steel.
Reinforced.
And have like 8 gadgets. These are heavy suckers that I have to carry around all day.
The doctor said she should get one of those teeter hang-ups. You remember? You ever see those on TV?
No,
that old guy who flips himself upside down. He invented this machine.
Oh my God!
Then she wouldn't be able to breathe if she did that.
Anyway,
you know, it's nice to have big breasts. I am the owner of 2 very natural and what used to be very nice big breasts. What I was told. And of course, I have 2 kids now, and I did nurse them for a long time. And the minute I get home, the first thing I do, and my children know, don't even talk to mommy until she removes her bra.
Yes, exactly.
You have not. I mean, and we're sitting here talking about how constricting and uncomfortable, and I won't go out without one. I'm not there yet. I haven't turned into that woman yet because I'm just not
thank
there.
Thank you. There's one mother.
I still can look good, but with a lot of help, and it's a sacrifice. As I tell my daughters all the time, it hurts to be beautiful. And back in the old days when women wore these ridiculous corsets, you know, we all remember the scene in Gone with the Wind when Scarlett O'Hara is up. Hello?
Yes. Yeah, we're still here.
Oh, okay. I thought I disconnected you. When she's holding onto the bedpost and Mammy is, you know, just sucking in her stomach to 21 inches. I mean, women wore clothing that was dangerous and unhealthy, and there was a movement. I mean, that's part of the whole bloomers movement, which were the pantaloons that shocked and was scandalous because women weren't wearing dresses down to the floor. But clothing has always been controversial because it's been physically unhealthy for women to wear these tight and even high heels.
Well,
all of it. And you know what? We like to look good, but for God's sake,
price
has gotten a little bit too high.
I'm worried
about the $400 that you spent on bras because, you know, she's not in the hospital because she's got some whalebone stuck in her ribs so she looks skinny, you know?
Well, listen, maybe there's a happy medium, but the fact is, first of all, thank you for that history lesson. I really appreciate that. That was fabulous.
You're welcome. I got a lot more of
about the corsets and the whole thing.
The thing is, I have not bought a nice bra in 10 years. My son is 10. I'm having babies. I have these bras that look like they're for 65, 70-year-old women.
Yeah, because they're functional.
Right.
They have
a job big, to do. They're large, they're beige. And, you know, the bloomers, as you call them, I would still call them the maternity underwear, still look like bloomers.
She hangs them up on the hook behind the door, and the whole hook breaks off.
It's a large bra. That's all I'm going to say. So finally, I said, I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to buy a sports bra. I'm going to buy a lacy bra. I'm going to buy, the, you know, something that's a little nicer for the big boob girl. So
let me Greg, say, but you're complaining because she actually bought a present for you.
Yeah, yes, I tried to show him, and he was horrified.
Okay, no, no, I agree with you. Listen, women are still doing a lot to dress up for men, or now they say they're doing it for each other. Is that correct?
Each other?
Always, not now. Always has been.
Okay,
that
so all that corset stuff. See, because I like the whole thing. I love it when a woman gets really dressed up well, and it takes more than a bra, Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
To
listen, when you get more than one pair of jeans, we'll talk. He has two pairs of jeans.
So what? They all look the same anyway. What's the difference?
Well, when you dress up, I'll dress up.
Nonsense.
I'm casual.
I will not
I'm a young mother.
I love it when when women wear stuff to make them look better. The whole corset thing was fabulous.
Did you ever try one on?
No, and I don't intend
to.
That's
so fabulous.
It's
they're
painful.
Okay if they come off right away.
My mother used to make me wear that crap when I was a kid. She used to put me in the tightest clothes.
His mother made him wear these tight pants. I'm surprised he can have children. His pants were so tight that his privates were bulging.
Well,
and he was like 11.
I'm no Tiger Woods, but seriously, they were polyester, and the polyester was the only thing that saved me. But when I came home from school, I was ready to kill somebody. I was wearing a turtleneck. I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
And
so you
my
understand
pants,
what it feels like to be in restrictive, uncomfortable clothing.
It's horrible.
So, yeah.
So I understand. I understand. But still.
So why do you want me to talk her into being a feminist? I didn't get that part.
Yeah, why?
To save money.
Oh, what?
How?
You don't need
feminists
to. You don't
buy nice clothes?
You don't need to spend $431 on eight bras.
Feminists don't save money.
Well, Greg, I don't understand. I'm so confused. You just said you like when women dress up nice for men, but you don't want her to spend the money on a sexy lacy bra for you.
She's no woman. That's no woman. That's my wife.
Oh, no.
I'm kidding, everyone.
I know.
I'm in love. She's my soulmate, and she doesn't believe that there's such things, so I'm really screwed.
Well, I got to tell you, I love you guys. You guys, when I talk about marriage, and I talk about marriage, and I think about
you talk about a lot of things, don't you? You're there's a picture of you next to the word yenta in my Jewish dictionary.
Tell us how much you love us. You were saying,
how you talk about us?
I mean, somebody actually just asked me. I was having a conversation about, because I'm divorced, and you know, it's very hard to be divorced, but there are times when I'm really happy I'm not married because I don't see a lot of really happy, healthy marriages. And it doesn't mean they're not out there. So I was talking to somebody, and I was trying to think of who I knew that had what I thought was a happy, healthy marriage, and I thought of you guys. And I'm not in your house. I don't really know what's going on. But, you know, I think you guys are – you give me hope. You really give me hope and faith, especially when I look back because I do my women's history. And the issue, you know, the whole institution of marriage was always a business arrangement. And it didn't start out as being in love. You know, marriage was arranged. And you stayed married because it was a business thing. And especially the Jewish culture, I mean, happy? Who's happy?
Right.
Who knows from happy?
Well, that's good.
And if you go to...
We didn't expect to be happy, so that's why it turned out okay.
See? You fell in with low expectations. You got lucky.
Right.
That's fantastic.
And she did reduce her expectations to marry me. I admit to that.
No.
But even when you look at Fiddler, if you look at Fiddler on the Roof, you know that song?
Sure.
When she says, "Do you love me?" And then she's like, "Do you?" He says, "Do you? Well, do you love me?" She's like, "For 25 years I've cooked for you. I've cleaned your clothes. I've scrubbed your house, you know. I've done. If that's not love, what is?" And that's where I want to pause and say, no, that's not love. It's because you're a slave to make it love.
Hey, it's like we have a musical as well.
That was great.
Ooh,
I love that. Let me think of.
Voice.
Let me. Do you know anything from Annie? No, I was just thinking. It did spice things up a lot. It's very difficult. So first of all, thank you. Secondly, it's a front. Third of all, Stephanie will stop cracking her knuckles, or I'll punch her in the face.
I crack my knuckles.
See, I just want to know. I'm sitting in my house. I'm not married. I'm cracking my knuckles, and I'm not wearing a bra, and I'm
See?
Very happy right now.
Right.
I've got to get rid of you. Listen, what bugged you about your husband that he did? Or what bugged him about you?
Oh, boy, is that a loaded question.
Well, you don't get the...
I have to say, Don Edwards comes to mind.
The what?
What did? What?
Don Edwards.
John Edwards. Oh, well, that's a big one when somebody does that.
Well, the answer, you know, that when you ask me what bugged me about my husband, I loved him very much. And, you know, it's not a funny thing because he destroyed a marriage and a family for lots of different reasons. Not that everyone doesn't have a role in it, but it was betrayal, you know.
Well, let me tell
you. And I bring up Don Edwards because that's, you know, once you're betrayed, that's it. It's really, really hard to rebound from that. And
it's a done deal.
When you pick someone to be your life partner, I mean, you two have chosen each other. You have three children. You have a family. To me, family is sacred. You don't mess with family. And, you know, you have to work. I'm sure, you know, we're all kidding around. You have this great marriage, it looks like. But I'm sure you work pretty hard at it. And there's lots of compromise going on all the time and sacrifice and negotiation and work and effort.
Yeah.
And all of it, you know.
Well, listen. You know, I totally agree, but here's the issue.
And
here.
Sometimes I eat his chocolate chip cookies, and he gets really mad. Like, well, he'll hide food.
No,
and then
she comes home.
It.
She comes home with cookies. She goes, "Look, I bought you some cookies," and she puts them in the cabinet. two days later, I go, "Where's my cookies?" Oh, sorry.
You have to be fast with cookies.
Oh, Greg, come on! You're from the East Coast. What are you losing? Your touch?
I'm losing.
Like,
listen, hold on. Two things about this. First of all, I agree that I'm sure it takes two to get into a situation like that. And Dr. Laura would wonder what you did to force him to go somewhere else. But there's nothing worse than a man who does what he does. I don't care what he did. You know what I mean?
Are you talking about John Edwards?
No, I'm talking about John Edwards. He should, nobody should do that to break up a family like that. That's the sign of a pussy.
Oh, yeah, he's a total coward, just like Tiger Woods. And it's just, to me, it's just really cowardly, exactly what it is. And I was thinking about this because, you know, you get married and you think it's going to, you hope, you work, you do everything, but sometimes it just doesn't work. And you should be able to leave. I mean, women weren't even allowed to get divorced until about 1830-something. Before, there were never grounds, there weren't even grounds for divorce. And if a woman wanted to divorce her husband, if he beat her, if he was an alcoholic, if he took his money, and they did all those things, they immediately lost their children.
Wow.
So women had to,
That's
just
amazing.
Immediately. They
How
could
sad.
Not. Oh, no, the laws, you know, when I started doing this research, when I started with Cheerios in my underwear, and I would do started doing some research, I do a bunch of, you know, fun little statistics about how mothers go crazy, you know, stuff like that. But it kind of led to other things, and so that's how I got on this road of women's history. But when I look at all the laws and the rules, women's property, the Married Women's Property Act was only passed in 1848, and it took forever to even get there. And we had to go state by state and judge by judge and to get women to have rights to leave an abusive marriage. And it's, you know, there's obviously a big holdover because even today you look at a situation like with Rihanna and Chris Brown and being in abusive relationships, you know, there's just a whole mentality there that takes way back.
Yeah.
But I think that doing the history, though, like reading about it, doesn't that make you, like, more angry? Like how women were just so held down?
I do believe when I got divorced and I realized that I was in a tough situation economically and legally, this is the way the system is set up, it got me really mad. And anger is very underrated because I think there's a lot of great energy in anger. And the only way things ever get changed is because people get pissed off and they organize and they change. So, yeah, getting divorced and reading about these women, you know, here I am thinking I have problems, and we all have problems, but you look back at some of the women and what they had to overcome. I mean, back in the day, women had 12, 13, 15 kids just because they hoped a couple of them would survive. There was, you know, lots of women died in childbirth. Half of women died in childbirth.
Well,
I actually would have died because I had to have C-sections.
Yeah.
So I would have died in childbirth.
That's why the men couldn't stay with them anymore after 15 kids. What do you expect?
No, well, they were dead. So there you go. It's hard to be with the dead women. It's not that interesting.
I love the necrophilia. Yeah,
we're going to have Amy back.
I know.
She's so fun.
We're actually out of time.
I'm creating a new show called Chief History. It's also a program for schools. the speaker series, and I'm doing it in New York in May for the Motherhood Foundation. So, you know, bring me back. I'll tell you all about it.
We would love to. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks for joining us. Take care.
Okay, guys.
Bye.
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 Greg and Stephanie's Life is Meaning.